did some reconnaissance on the ground and speaking to an organization there that's gearing up to for resistance and protest. I can't tell you exactly what they're doing, but it's called Operation Pull Up.
Tell us why you're doing this.
This is Operation Pull Up, more of a clandestine operation. We show up somewhere that is a key location. They don't expect us to come there. And then we disrupt business as usual.
The 1994 Clinton-era FACE Act, meant to shield abortion mills from verifiable threats, got weaponized overnight when a pack of anti-ICE radicals, egged on and live-streamed by CNN has-been Don Lemon.
This is the beginning of what's going to happen here. When you violate people's due process, when you pull people off the street, you start dragging them and hurting them and not abiding by the Constitution, when you start doing all of that, people get upset and angry. Remember what the civil rights movement was about.
As you can see, all these pretend Christians, all these comfortable white people who are living lavish, comfortable lives while children are dragged into concentration camps.
These clowns barged in mid-service, falsely claiming some pastor doubled as an ICE honcho, scaring kids to tears, emptying pews, and forcing the whole congregation to scatter in distress.
Renee, go!
All while Lemon played director, camera rolling, smugly defending the chaos as First Amendment theater and whining that disruption is just what protesting is about.
Watch this guy here, look, hugging his kid. And, you know, I've imagined it's uncomfortable and traumatic for the people here, but that's what protesting is about. And so
you heard what some of the folks said in there. You know, that this is, they shouldn't be there and, you know, they shouldn't be uncomfortable and this is our house and whatever. That's what protesting is about, is to make people uncomfortable. You may not like it.
It's called journalism. First Amendment, all that stuff. For all of you people who believe in the First Amendment, absolutist. There you go. So why don't you talk to the actual person who is in charge of the organization and whose idea it was to have the protests at the church before you start blaming me for stuff for which you have no idea.
How would you feel if I went to your house and I started yelling?
It depends on what I did, but not in my house. That's a whole different thing. I think these people would go inside of anybody's house.
This is the house of God.
But Don, how is it that you defend yourself with First Amendment protections while simultaneously prohibiting the free exercise thereof of an establishment of religion, a violation of the very same amendment?
What do you think of this?
I mean, this is unacceptable. It's shameful. It's shameful to interrupt a public gathering of Christians in worship. So,
but there were folks who said,
I have to take care of my flock.
Okay,
my family.
Listen, we live in a constitution in the First Amendment to freedom of speech and freedom to assemble and protest.
Yeah. We're here to worship. We're here to worship Jesus because that's the hope of these cities. That's the hope of the world is Jesus Christ.
I want to be very respectful. Please don't push me, though.
We're here to worship Jesus.
Yes.
That's why we're here.
The FACE Act explicitly bans using force, threats, or physical obstruction to intimidate or interfere with people exercising their religious freedom at a place of worship, an act the Biden administration used to prosecute at least 25 FACE Act cases involving roughly 60 defendants. These cases accounted for roughly 24% of all FACE Act prosecutions in the law's 30-year history up to that point.
Take, for example, one of our witnesses here today, Paul Vaughn, who was prosecuted for praying outside of an abortion clinic. Vaughn was arrested when an FBI SWAT team raided his home at gunpoint early in the morning in front of his wife and 11 children, later sentencing him to 6 months of home confinement and 3 years of probation. Another FACE Act defendant, Lauren Handy, was sentenced to 57 months in prison for her role in protesting late-term abortion within our nation's capital. And I would note, this happens to be an individual that I don't always align with philosophically. In another grotesque prosecution, the weaponized Biden-Harris Justice Department recently sentenced a 75-year-old grandmother, Paulette Harlow, to a 24-month federal prison sentence. And again, in the case of Eva Idle, an 89-year-old, I repeat, 89-year-old death camp survivor who is awaiting federal sentencing for...
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the War Room is on, and I'm joined in studio by the raw egg nationalist, Dr. Charles Cornish Dale. You can find him on X at BabyGravy9, raweggnationalist.com. I love that every time you're on and I read your username out, you laugh. It's a great name, BabyGravy9 on X. Although when I was trying to tag you today, it took me a second because I'm typing raw egg national. What is Baby Gravy 9 on X, folks? You got to follow him. He's an Oxford and Cambridge educated historian and anthropologist who rose to prominence writing under that pseudonym Raw Egg Nationalist. Of course, he's a writer for InfoWars. And his latest book, published by Skyhorse, is called The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. There it is. And it's funny, I totally didn't make the connection that that's your name, because I have your other book, the Egg Benedict option, where you're just credited as Raw Egg Nationalist. So I saw this book, and I thought, oh, he wrote a book with some doctor and got a byline. But you're the doctor, Charles Cornishdale. Very good to know. Welcome to the show, sir.
It's fantastic to be here, Harrison. Really is.
Well, I think your book is very pertinent to everything going on right now. Because we talk about the psyops going on and the financial manipulation, I try to remind the audience there's an underlying chemical element to this, that one of the reasons that we're not seeing men stand up against tyranny is they are physically weaker, physically incapable of doing what previous generations were, and a lot of that has to do with testosterone. But talk a little bit about that, the underlying physicality, the chemical attack that the world is under.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a real pleasure and a privilege to be here. I filled in for Alex on the fourth hour of the show, and Alex has done a huge, huge amount to raise awareness, actually, of the biological war that is being waged on modern men and on women too. But it's been underappreciated. You can talk about the politics, you can talk about left versus right, you can talk about liberty and tyranny and whatever, but actually, there's another kind of war, a silent war that's going on, beneath the surface: endocrine disrupting chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, birth control, the additives that are in processed food. They're all having this huge effect, huge biological effect on our vitality, on our resilience, on our hormone levels in particular. And that's what the book is about. The book is about the civilizational decline in testosterone levels that's been taking place for decades. And not just the physical results of that, but also the political too, because it does have political implications. So I was on with Brianna Morello this morning, and we were talking about what it actually means to have a full society of men who are, or maybe not a full, but approaching a kind of full society, where men have low testosterone. What does that actually mean politically? It means a lot of things. It means, among other things, that men are easier to govern, less likely to resist, they're less patriotic, they don't think the way and feel the way that men should feel, that men have been programmed to feel by hundreds of thousands, millions of years of evolution. I mean, testosterone is the master male hormone. It's essential to proper male health, but it also has political implications. It also has political functions. You can give a man a dose of testosterone and he will become happier with inequality. He'll become happier with hierarchy. I mean, there are actual studies that show this.
Right. He'll become more honest.
Exactly, yeah. A man administered a dose of testosterone gel is more likely to stand up and assert a minority viewpoint against the majority than the man who receives the placebo.
Right.
I mean, that's huge. Right? That is. That's huge.
Yeah, and the political implications are sort of unimaginable. I mean, when you really start thinking about what we're talking about here, it's almost impossible to quantify. I guess the question is, chicken or the egg? Are we liberal because we have less testosterone, or do we have less testosterone because of the liberal programming?
I think it's a combination. I think it's actually
a feedback loop, really.
It's a feedback loop. It's a vicious circle. So the book is about biology. The book is about this biological assault that's taking place, that's, you know, processed foods, sedentary lifestyles, exposure to endocrine-disrupting chemicals, glyphosate, atrazine, whatever. But it's also about the nature of the political system itself. So I asked some quite unnerving questions, actually, about the nature of liberal democracy and whether liberal democracy basically is a low-testosterone political system.
Right.
And I'm not really the first person to... Well, I'm the first person really to frame the question in that way, but actually thinkers like Francis Fukuyama, who is one of the main influences, Nietzsche too, have you know, said some quite suggestive things about the role of... Fukuyama frames it in terms of thymos, which is an ancient Greek term for man's desire to assert himself, basically.
Right.
His kind of vigorousness, spiritedness, if you will. And he basically says, actually, you know, liberal democracy, the triumph of liberal democracy is a victory over a certain kind of thymos. You know, men can't be men in particular ways within a liberal democratic system. Well, actually, you know, thymos is a good proxy for testosterone. All of the kind of behaviors that we associate with thymos, assertiveness, motivation, patriotism, a willingness to fight, etc., those kinds of things, that's a proxy for testosterone. So, you know, like you're in a low testosterone political system, which doesn't allow men to assert themselves in particular ways. And then also you've got this biological assault that's taking place as well. So you're undermining masculinity from multiple directions at once. And it is having a really vicious effect. But it's something actually, you know, that like this crisis of masculinity literature, Jordan B. Peterson, for example, you know, his whole career as a public intellectual was built off telling young men to clean their rooms.
Right.
None of these people talk about it. It's interesting, actually. You know, you can pick up a book, Richard Reeves, he wrote a book about masculinity, the name escapes me. You go to the index and look up testosterone and there's basically nothing. There's like one reference, and that's it, you know. But it's key. It's absolutely right. Key, this biological process, that's this biological decline that's happening.
Yeah, you're missing an essential element of what's going on. Again, it's... And, you know, when you really think about what the implications are of this and, like, how this might impact you on a day-to-day basis, again, we have no idea. And really, it's like a dampening of our vitality across the board. And one of the things I remember seeing, lower testosterone makes you less likely to go with your gut.
Yes.
And that's just sort of the vernacular that we use. What that means is your brain is taking in all of these symbols you're unconsciously processing. And you're sort of just delivered a conclusion that you didn't logically, you know, figure out. It just is delivered to you. But that's just a pure, you know, unfiltered, unprocessed, absorption of reality. So when you say, you know, lower testosterone means you're less likely to go with your gut, really that means you're being cut off from like this immediacy to reality and an ability to even see and comprehend reality. It's like we're having our glasses taken off and the world around us is fuzzy. There's something very profound about that, I think.
Well, look, I mean, sometimes our instincts can be wrong. We can be mistaken in our instinctual responses to a particular situation. But instincts, stereotypes, prevail for a reason. They endure for a reason because actually for hundreds of thousands of years since we've been modern humans, and millions of years, our ancestors, our primate ancestors, you know, they've been, these instincts have driven us to survive. You know, they are a survival mechanism, and you need them. It is a survival mechanism. But yes, I mean, having low testosterone, you're less likely to go with your gut. That might be good in some situations, but it might also be actually catastrophic in others. It might be catastrophic in a situation where actually, you know, maybe like the coronavirus pandemic, for example, you know,
right.
You don't know the science. You don't know about, you know, mRNA vaccines, but nevertheless, you can feel something is very wrong.
Right.
The government is doing something unheralded. Something's very wrong. They're not telling us. You know, a man with high testosterone might be more inclined to resist that. And it was very noticeable during the pandemic that, in fact, gym bros were one of the principal constituencies that just resisted on principle and said, look, no, you're not closing my gym. You're not preventing me from exercising. You're not preventing me from fortifying my body, because actually that's what you need. You need to be strong. You don't make people strong. You don't protect people by making them weak and keeping them inside. You strengthen their body. You know, you build your natural defenses. So yeah, I mean, we don't fully understand everything about testosterone, but I think what we do understand actually should be telling us to take this civilizational decline much more seriously than we have been. And so that's my main hope, really, with the book, is that actually, look, I can restore the biological aspect to the discussion and say, look, okay, yeah, you've talked about what it's like to work in a corporation with an HR section that's totally run by, you know, like fat liberal women with pink hair. And I mean, yeah, that's part of the crisis, you know, like it's the feminization of the workplace and all these other things. But actually, there's something else going on
That's like a symptom.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's symptom and cause. I mean, all of these things are interacting in kind of interesting ways and, like we said, becoming a sort of vicious cycle. But actually, we're just not talking about the biological causes.
Right. Well, it's a negative feedback loop, but it's encouraged. I mean, you know, it's gone from sort of this, you know, maybe people didn't notice it, but testosterone was sort of on the decline anyway, just because of the natural consequences of the way our food is prepared and all of that stuff. But then something happened, you know, about 10 years ago with the transgenderism and the, you know, feminism going absolutely crazy, where they then decided, okay, we actually have to target men, target masculinity, deliberately destroy it. And that's a whole other level of evil. And of course, a feedback loop that was already in process is only having the gas slammed on it and you know, going to go that much faster.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I often say, and it might seem a bit glib to some people, is that, look, if all of these industrial chemicals, all of these toxic substances that we're exposed to on a daily basis were increasing testosterone levels and making men more masculine, more vigorous, more likely to stand up for themselves, more assertive, etc., more patriotic, you can bet that the governments of the world would have brought in 100%. The most stringent regulations and cleaned up the environment, you know, clean as a whistle, no more chemicals being released into the water, into the food supply, etc. But because these chemicals actually make us more compliant, they make us more dependent and docile, nothing's really done about it. And it's something that can easily be dismissed as a conspiracy theory, as the gay frogs, famously the gay frogs conspiracy theory was 10 years ago.
Yeah. And it was, of course, absolutely true. And all of this, again, is almost just like emblematic of what we're dealing with in a wider, like, geopolitical sphere, right? The idea of, you know, they want people to be weak. They want people to be sad and pathetic and demoralized, because that makes people easier to control, that if it's something that makes you stronger, they're going to get rid of it. I mean, it's all like almost symbolic. How we treat our bodies and the effects that our bodies is exactly the same thing that happens on a political level. And so when you see, like, one of the most upsetting things about the modern world is seeing these utterly unimpressive, weak nerds running the world. I mean, you watch World Economic Forum, you're like, these guys, I mean, you watch Keir Starmer try to hammer a nail or something or throw a punch, and it's the most pathetic thing you've ever seen. And our world was built by guys who, you know, in Rome, you weren't going to get a position unless you had survived at least one sword fight. I mean, we are missing something very tangible and real from the like mindset of the people ruling over us. That, again, is it a cause or an effect? It's something at the heart of this issue, is that we're being ruled by these weak men.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's always a funny thing, isn't it, to look at the health ministers of various different nations. And, well, I mean, and also, you know, Lloyd Austin, the secretary of Secretary of Defense. You know, there's that famous series of pictures of him during the coronavirus pandemic, you know, inspecting the troops.
With a mask and the other mask.
With a visor. And then now what have you got? You've got Pete Hegseth,
yeah.
who is doing PT with, I mean, was a soldier himself. I mean, that's what it means to lead by example. I mean, a lot of liberals don't understand actually just how important that is, and they don't get why Pete Hegseth is so popular with the troops. Well, it's because actually he goes out early morning and does PT with them. He does log carries. You know, he does a run with them. He does push-ups. And the same with J.D. Vance. You know, I mean, it's like that's actually what leadership looked like for the entire span of human history until 50 years ago, 70 right. years ago, maybe even less than that. And it does have a biological component. It is a biological thing, you know. I mean, the original aristocracies were all war aristocracies, you know. I mean, the best example of this, of course, is the Norman Conquest, right? You know, William the Conqueror beats the Anglo-Saxons and replaces wholesale the Anglo-Saxon nobility of England with Normans he's brought over and who fought with him at the Battle of Hastings.
Right, I mean, and it wasn't because they had the best ideas.
No, it wasn't. It was because they were better at swinging axes into other men's heads than the Saxons were.
And turns out if you're better at that, your ideas win at the end. Your ideas get imposed if you're just the better fighter. And because there's something just real about that. There's something undeniable about it. And, you know, we always talk about there's a very interesting, you know, overlap between martial arts, you know, fighting sports and right-wing politics, because theory falls apart when you're in the ring, right? You can have all the, you know, convoluted ideas you want, and liberalism is entirely propped up by these convoluted, highfalutin academic ideas that don't bear any weight in reality. That all falls apart when you get punched in the face. And, you know, a similar thing I think is happening with the ICE protests, where you have these women going out and like getting in the faces of these like 6.5 foot tall men, and but they think that they're in a game where they can't get hurt, and they are the tough ones, they're the strong ones because they're on the right side of history. And it's like, it's just this delusion that's totally disconnected. So physical strength, there's just something real and undeniable about it, that maybe it's that reality that you know, the left just fears and hates and wants to run away from.
Yeah, well, it was very sad, actually, you know, watching the aftermath of the shooting of Renee Good and hearing her wife or husband saying, "I thought you didn't have real bullets." She actually said that.
Why do you have real bullets?
Why do you have real bullets? And it's like, well, yeah, because this isn't a game.
Right.
And actually, you've been watching your Marvel films and playing your girl boss video games and, you know, thinking that you can just, you know, like defeat the evil empire, defeat the evil Nazis, like you might in a game, or you might see on the, and it's not like that. It's not like that. I mean, if you're genuinely going to pose a threat to a law enforcement officer, what's going to happen? I mean, they're going to protect themselves, and they have every right to, and that's been the norm in every single society up until ours, and it was the norm here until not that long ago. But now suddenly the rules of the game have been changed, or at least these people think rules have been changed, and they can behave like that with impunity. I mean, you can't try to run a police officer or a law enforcement agent over.
It was a real car, and he's going to use real bullets. I mean,
I mean, the notion that a 4,500-pound SUV isn't a weapon is just insane. But people were saying it, and you know, people were. Jacob Frey was saying, you know, like, oh, he walked away afterwards. Well, yeah, I mean, he did walk away because he was quick enough on the draw that actually he could fire, and he shot her, and so she's spinning the wheel away. But actually, she could have hit him straight on and run him over.
Yeah. And it's about this imposition where you've got these guys that could easily take out all of the people opposing them, but there's this we just live in this like imaginary world where these incredibly weak and unimpressive people are somehow getting the better of these very strong and impressive guys. It can't last that long. You can't prop up something fake forever, right? It eventually collapses into reality.
Yeah, well, Sigmund Freud called it the return of the repressed.
Mm.
He was talking about psychological phenomena, but it is a psychological phenomenon, but it's also a physical and a social phenomenon. But yes, it does return. I mean, you can try and sit on reality for as long as possible and keep it down, but it has this horrible habit of reasserting itself because it's real, because it's the actual nature of the world.
And then again, to connect, because I just can't help but, you know, draw these connections between what we're talking about and then the World Economic Forum. And one of the big things of the World Economic Forum is you had Mark Carney basically admitting, yeah, you know, the rules-based international order was never real because we never had ability to stop a strong state from ignoring us. No. And there's something about that I feel like connects to ICE, where it's like we're voluntarily participating in this submissive activity. We don't have to. America never had to be subject to European courts, but for the sake of the world, we decided to. But it feels like that illusion is falling, and we're just like, why are we doing this? Why are we playing this game with these weaker people to where we can pretend that they're in charge? And it's like, enough of this. We're in charge. We need to assert that. So I see a connection between all of this.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I mean, the rules-based international order is a legal fiction.
Right.
It's a legal fiction that emerged in the aftermath of World War II. But it was always a fiction, and in many respects, you know, it was America voluntarily tying its hands behind its back. And, you know, I mean, civilization in certain respects obviously does depend on people relinquishing violence as the go-to option for everything. You know, like, you can't have a civilized society if the recourse in any situation is just for the stronger person to smack the weaker person on the head with a club. But what you can't do is you can't eliminate violence as an option. I mean, there's that great quote from Starship Troopers, isn't there, about, you know, the basis of all morality is violence, or the basis of all order is violence. And it's, and we don't need to talk about whether Starship Troopers is a satire or not,
because they're
rehashing that every 5 minutes on Twitter. But you know, like, it's true. I mean, it's actually true. And I think, you know, Americans feel, and Donald Trump certainly feels, you know, that actually, okay, well, we've tied our hands behind our backs and we haven't actually benefited from doing that. And so maybe let's untie our hands and maybe let's actually, you know, go and get what we want, because the country has been deliberately collapsed, or at least they've tried to collapse it and, you know, got quite far along that road. And so actually, no, I mean, we're not going to go along with measures that actually harm America simply for the sake of maintaining this fiction that we live in a rules-based international order when we don't, because other countries don't obey.
And again, it's like the same thing's happening on the international level is happening on the national level, where, you know, if a family member of mine was injured by somebody, I don't have to wait for the court to take care of it. I'm capable of wielding my own justice, but you suppress that and you participate because you understand that if everybody were to act impulsively like that, it wouldn't be a civilization. But I have to know that I am going to get justice at the end of the day. That by not fulfilling my desire to go out and get justice myself, the society that we built will provide it for me. But that's going away too now. And people are, I mean, you've got the racial aspect of juries. We've got juries, you know, being forced to admit, that guy was guilty, but we didn't want him to be guilty because he's black and we're black, or whether it's just not charging people who commit crimes. I mean, people are losing faith in the justice system and are going to start taking things into their own hands. And that's when everything collapses. I mean, talk about a feedback loop. Once that gets going, there's really no stopping it. We're going to go to a quick commercial break here in just a second, then we'll be back on the other side with Dr. Charles Cornish Dale, known better as Raw Egg Nationalist. You can follow him on X at BabyGravy9, RawEggNationalist.com. His new book is titled The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity, and it's available. Is it available now?
It is.
It is available now from Skyhorse Publishing, The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity by Dr. Charles Cornish Dale. We'll be back on the other side with more. He's going to sit with us through the whole show, so we'll take your calls in the next hour. But back with more on the other side.
I want to thank the viewers and listeners for your endless and tireless support over the years. We try to make it easy to be supporters with fabulous products that really enrich and empower your life. A wide selection of Patriot apparel, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. All sorts of really cool knives, collectibles, and the most important, the best supplements you're going to find anywhere. Whatever the highest rated is, whatever has the best studies, whatever has the 5-star reviews. I mean, if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, if you don't get our bovine colostrum, that's the very best, if you don't get our Shilajit or our CMOS, you're crazy. If you don't get our turmeric, that's the strongest out there. Anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, so good for you. You're crazy. Big sales going on the side, 40% off on things like the World War II modern version trench knife, limited edition InfoWars black on white trucker hat, free with every order. And they had this thing going since Thursday. I didn't notice it until Sunday, so I had them extended one day today. But that's it. Every order gets one of these, limited edition, in there. So get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. But with the deals we got, we need to sell a lot of stuff to fund this operation. So do yourself a favor, Mr. Sit on the Fency. I'm not mad at you. I'm telling you. Get the methylene blue. We have the best. It is so good for you. It is so game-changing. So good for your mind. So good for all your cells. So good for telomeres. Just get a bottle of ultramethylene blue. Support the broadcast. Finally, because we got even more documents in and more depositions and things, we are about to file our huge, massive civil rights suit with conspiracy against rights, all the proof, the DOJ, the CIA, the Democratic Party, you know, the law firms. I mean, this is a... And by the way, under the rules, we had to show them the suit a few weeks ago. And they went completely ape and threatened us and everything else with, you know, all this stuff they're going to do. Great. Because we got all the evidence up one side and down the other. But I'm taking on the big boys. So know this. The majority of the funding you send us buying products goes to the fight against the tyrants. And we are fully committed to that. They want this show off the air because I know what I'm talking about. That's why I get mad at the shows that are, you know, innuendo and conspiracy theories. I've never been a conspiracy theorist, folks. That's what the media calls me. That's a CIA term. I am an analyst. I'm a futurist. And I know what I'm talking about. And my guests know what they're talking about. You know my rule. Who do I have on all the time? People that are consistently right. I associate with people that got their acts together. And I can tell you, we know what we're doing. This broadcast belongs to you. You built this. It's fighting for your future, my future, all of us collectively. But we can't do it without you. Make the commitment in this ocean of media and information. The bad guys particularly hate this show because we know what we're doing. We're steering people right. But we can't take these people on without you. I need your support. Word of mouth, prayer, and financial support. And I make it damn easy. This is a win-win. All you got to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com. I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and a father and a guy who loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. Please do support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We got a lot of great supplements there. We got the new, you always send us home with your books and your magazines and everything. We need to send you home with some tallow, with some of the colostrum, bovine colostrum.
Oh, amazing.
Plus. What's your take on tallow?
Tallow is great. You know, I do have sensitive skin, and I find that there's nothing better than the tallow. Tallow is the best. It's good for your lips. It's good for any part of your body and your skin.
We've got the best. We've got the best at thealexjonesstore.com. We'll have to send you home with some of the high quality bovine colostrum plus or the tallow or maybe one of these big knives. But you might get arrested for having this knife. Maybe we don't send you back to the UK with a giant dagger. You can enjoy. You can play with them while you're here. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. I hope that you do. My guest sitting in studio with me is raw egg nationalist, Dr. Charles Cornish Dale. His new book is called The Last Men, Liberalism and the Death of Masculinity. You can find it at raweggnationalist.com. There it is. Fantastic stuff. And obviously the World Economic Forum is going on right now. Have you been able to follow it at all? What's your take on this year's festivities?
Well, I mean, it's just hard to ignore Trump, isn't it? I mean, he's just been on such a tear, laughing at Emmanuel Macron's sunglasses and maybe suggesting that Brigitte Macron has slapped him in the face again.
Well, we know that he has. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But yeah, I mean, it's just it's vintage Trump. I mean,
yeah.
It's Trump, like J.D. Vance said, going into the lion's den and just not giving an inch, not backing down. You know. This is, we've been talking about masculinity, weak men, strong men. I mean, you only need to contrast Trump with someone like Mark Carney, right?
I mean,
this is the vision of this is the difference between weak men and strong men representing their country's real interests rather than the interests of a narrow globalist elite, you know, that is quite happy to despoil their nations and, you know, sell their nations down the river and replace the native population wholesale. You know, you've got a brave, basically alpha Chad, Giga Chad leader who just goes there and just says what he thinks and you know, deals with the consequences.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how much, as a general rule, you know, people hate a man who says what he thinks and feels and stands by it in the face of, because I mean, he's there basically on his own. You know, he is in the lion's den. It's the whole world against him, and they had that stupid no kings display up on the mountain and stuff. I mean he's the main character, of course, at Davos, so yeah, it is all about Trump.
Yeah, it's very fun. As much as, you know, we might we might complain about you know, he's not arresting enough people and all stuff. He provides such a potent model for the great man as it can exist in the modern age. And actually, that was where I first heard the word you used earlier. I wrote it down because I always forget it. Thymos was a video from Sargon of Akkad, Carl Benjamin, talking about the great man theory, and that it was this, you know, what Trump represented is this return of something that the liberal elite told us was over forever. That was the past, the great man theory. First, they'll say it never really existed. It's all trends and forces. But basically, they don't want to believe that, you know, men with vision and ideas can actually alter the course of all of human history. And Trump is a shining example of that.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, you know, you could talk about Oswald Spengler. You could talk about the return of Caesarism or whatever, you know, the return of the great man at the end of the sort of dying republic or whatever. But I mean, yeah, it is a return to the great man theory. I mean, it's a direct, Donald Trump is a direct refutation of the notion that one man cannot change the world.
Yeah.
I mean, because he really has, through sheer force of personality and will.
Yeah.
It's inspiring because, of course, it ramifies, you know, we were talking about this in the break, it ramifies at every single level. So it's not just the fact that we're told that actually great men don't exist, a great men, capital G, capital M. It's that men don't exist. It's that individuals don't exist. It's that we're all prey to social forces and structures. You know, we don't really have any agency, but actually you do. And, you know, to watch Donald Trump doing that kind of stuff, being so defiant, standing up in the face of all of these awful globalist lickspittles.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, that is inspiring. That's empowering, I think, on an individual level as well as a national level.
It is. And, of course, you know, Trump's not the only one. Elon Musk, I think, is in that mold. I mean, I think people are going to be talking about him for the next 2,000 years. And the way that he opened up X has had profound effect on the course of human history from here on out. The fact that we are even aware of certain things that we wouldn't be aware of otherwise. Yeah. Alex Jones, I'd put in that same mold, right? He just did it. Nobody paved the way for him. There was no position he was slotted into. He had to be a maverick. He had to blaze his own trail. And you can do that. And it's there's something fundamental about that, right? There's something, but there's also something that it's almost a like a failsafe. Like it's almost like when we want to trust the system, but at a certain point the system starts to break down, and you know like we're relying on these men like Elon Musk or Donald Trump to sort of step in that gap and haul things back as an individual. And it's like it's a condemnation of our systems that we require people like Trump and Elon Musk. Do you see what I'm saying? Do you know what I mean? That it's like, I'm glad that Elon Musk stepped up, bought X, and opened up free speech, even though all the prevailing winds against him. But we shouldn't need that. We should already have free speech. Our system should uphold these things. We shouldn't need to rely on these individuals. It's not a safe bet that we're always going to be delivered an Elon Musk or a Trump. You know, we need systems that can uphold these rather than the men. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I do. No, I mean, I do think that the emergence of strong men and the return of the great man, whether you're talking about Trump or whether you're talking about Musk, is a condemnation of the system, of course. It's like, right, you know, all the hopes of the nation rest upon this one person or these two or three people. And yes, you can't, although it does seem to be let's say it is something of an historical cycle or an historical rule that actually these people do emerge in times of crisis, in times of profound confusion. You do get someone who somehow just seems to embody the hopes and fears of the entire nation. And I mean, Donald Trump really is in his person, and I've written about this kind of extensively. He does embody Americanism. Like, he is an actual, he's a man and he's a symbol.
He's like an avatar, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, like even his hair is gold.
Right.
The American dream. It's Donald Trump's spun gold hair. You know? But yeah, I mean, we can't be complacent, I think, in just assuming that. I mean, yes, we have these great men, but we can't just be complacent in assuming that they're going to solve everything. I mean,
right,
we have to work too. We have to push too. We all have to bear some of the load, even if, nevertheless, you have these titanic figures who are carrying basically the hopes and fears and destiny of a nation on their back. You know, we have to push too.
And one of the important things about the great men is that they inspire that in other people, or they give you a path forward, which is why the powers that be now are so insistent on punishing Trump and punishing Musk as an example to go, you think you can stand up against us, but we will destroy you in the end, as a signal to everybody who might be inspired by them.
Yeah, of course, and it's an attempt, and also what they try to do is they try to delegitimize them in various different ways. You know, like, Donald Trump was never a successful businessman. Donald Trump was a nepo baby. You know, he inherited money from his father, who was a kind of real estate mogul in New York or whatever. And the same with Elon Musk, right? Oh, his family were in diamonds before whatever, and. He's just stolen money from people. So he's not actually a great man. You know, he hasn't, he isn't a visionary. He isn't maybe our only hope at the moment, certainly of becoming an interplanetary species and colonizing Mars and then from there the rest of the solar system, whatever. No, it's just these people are just thieves.
Yeah.
They're robber barons, basically, is what they are. But
And that's the idea that's put across. And even as you're saying that, you can just hear the hatred, the anger, the jealousy that comes out. Like, I can't imagine being in that mindset. But I think it's important to understand that that's where a lot of people are coming from. They see great men and it literally makes them mad. It makes them seethe. It makes them angry for some reason.
Well, it does. And I mean, I think because their project is the transformation of society in a very particular way. But, you know, we were talking before the show about Robin Hood, and you were saying about, there's a new Robin Hood film that's coming out that's called The Death of Robin Hood, I think. I don't know. Have you seen the trailer for this?
I've heard about it, but I don't remember what the...
Well, so it's, you know, it's like, it's one of these, of course. It's got Hugh Jackman in it, I think, as an elderly Robin Hood. But basically the tagline is something like, he was no hero.
Of course.
Of course, right? And so it's like Robin Hood at the end of his life confessing his sins, you know, and he's an old man and he's killed people and he's robbed and you know, he wasn't actually a good man. He didn't deserve to be mythologized. He wasn't a hero. And that's what happens. I mean, we see this happening across us. It's not just Donald Trump. It's not just Elon Musk. It's male role models across the board, right? And that's part of the reason why we have all of these kind of ridiculous girl boss films and all of these stereotypes of... There was actually an article about this the other day, about the fact, you know, why is Hollywood and TV so obsessed with mediocre men, the mediocrity of men and the kind of suppressed excellence of women.
Right.
And so it's like, who run the world? Girls, right? They're the women secretly are the competent ones. And so we're told, for example, you know, with the NASA moon landing, it was the longhand calculations of this young woman.
I was going to say, Robin Hood not worth celebrating, the human calculators at NASA are, right? Yeah. We got our priorities crooked here.
But it's very deliberate. Like, it makes you sigh. I mean, it makes you sigh, and you're like, oh, not another film where they've, you know, it's like the Predators film that they did, where it was among the American Indians, you know, and it's a girl boss fighting the Predator with a bow and arrow, and you've gone from Arnie with a, you know, with a chain gun. And
The minigun, but it's everything, right? It's Star Wars, it's Lord of the Rings. All of them have been deliberately hollowed out like this, and it's why Hollywood is collapsing now, because nobody, connects with that. Nobody, that doesn't inspire anybody. Mm. It's fake, it's false. Everybody gets that intrinsically, or like, you know, at the lower levels of their brain, it doesn't make sense, so nobody connects to it.
Yeah.
It's not inspiring, it's nothing.
Yeah, well, you're not giving people the kind of stories that they yearn for. I mean, women need inspiring stories too. Of course they do. And I mean, you know, like you have films like Alien from 1979. You know, yep. I mean, Ripley was a strong female lead, but it didn't bash you around the head with feminist messaging. It didn't say that all of the men on the Nostromo were useless and they were mediocre white men who'd been promoted simply because they were mediocre.
And she had a hard time defeating the aliens. Yeah. It wasn't a cakewalk for her, like Rey from Star Wars or whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't this sort of ridiculous kind of girl bossery that you see with like She-Hulk or something, or Rey in Star Wars or whatever. But yeah, you know, you're selling people stuff that they don't want. And actually, the thing is, they don't have to buy it.
Right.
That's the thing. And so we still, thankfully, we live in a society actually where people don't have to buy films. You don't have to watch The Rings of Power.
Right.
If you don't want to see, you know, girl bosses running amok in Tolkien's Middle Earth. You don't have to buy it, thank God.
Absolutely. And actually, and again, just to reference him again, Sargon of Akkad came out with a really brilliant video recently, and I actually keep having it in my video list, but I haven't gone to it yet. But he's talking about Tolkien and George R. R. Martin and the contrast between these two worldviews. And I think that sort of applies to what we're talking about, because it's sort of the best embodiment of these two ideas. You have Aragorn, the quintessential great man, right? The return of the king, the great man, you know, swooping in to save his people. Whereas in George R. R. Martin, his whole reason he writes books is to bash that down and to say, no, your heroes are worthless and will be killed and all the evil people will win. And there's something very fundamental about that, where, again, you know, people are still to this day obsessed with Lord of the Rings. It was written 100 years ago. Game of Thrones has been off the air 3 years and nobody even cares about it anymore.
Yeah, that's funny. What was that about? What's Aragorn's tax policy?
That's the name of it.
Yeah, but that's something that George R. R. Martin actually said. He was like, I don't like The Lord of the Rings because you don't get a sense of what Aragorn's tax policy would be. You've got the wrong end of the stick here if you think that that's what this, you know, what this trilogy is supposed to be, is about, you know, how Aragorn is going to run Gondor once he defeats
the bureaucracy.
Sauron.
But what does the bureaucracy look like?
Yeah, but it's a strange thing, you know, this obsession with gray.
Yeah.
So there's no black and white, and I mean it's a fundamental mistake, because of course, you know, people will say, well, you know, there's no hard and fast point at which white becomes black, right? Mm. And that's true. You know, you shade through from one to the other. But nevertheless, you can represent at the opposite end of the spectrum. You can see that actually white is not black.
Right.
And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you want to depict a kind of fantasy medieval setting in morally ambiguous terms, and you want to suggest maybe that actually, you know, even the good guys have to employ foul means in order to whatever, or that people don't get what they deserve. But that happens in Lord of the Rings too. I mean, does Boromir deserve to die?
Right.
You know, there's a complexity to Lord of the Rings, but it's a different kind of complexity, and it's an attempt to tell a story, I think, on a really grand scale, verging on the mythological. And I mean, Tolkien had this idea that actually the 20th century, the modern world needed a new mythos.
Right.
And a mythos isn't a tax policy, isn't an exposition of a tax policy. A mythos is an organizing narrative that provides you with a clear direction in which to in which to orient yourself in the world in order to act meaningfully. And, you know, that's what the Lord of the Rings is. It's like fight for your people, fight for what's right.
And it's so funny because the left seems bent on like shattering these illusions, but they aren't illusions. Lord of the Rings is more realistic, I think, than Game of Thrones is. And actually, it was you that asked me to write an article about the Alamo. So I look to the Alamo of something. It's like a fantasy movie. It's like this idea of these, you know, this ragtag group of nobodies who goes up against this army of thousands and they die. But in their sacrifice, you know, victory is born. It's like, no, actually, good guys don't always lose. Actually, you know, the left wants us to believe that, you know, nothing good ever happens. Actually, it's what Alex Jones always says. You know, the devil's greatest trick was not convincing people he didn't exist. The devil's greatest trick is convincing people good doesn't exist to fight back against him. And that's where I think the George R. Martins of the world are coming from, is they think it's you're a stupid child if you believe good exists and can defeat evil. Evil will always win. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy to a great extent, too. You can look at what Sauron did in Lord of the Rings, right? He was using the Palantir to convince his enemies that they had already lost, and so they had to join him. That's why, you know, Saruman went over to him, because Saruman, he was showing him these fake images of this huge army that was undefeatable. So, like, that's a big part of it, right? Is pushing out to the people of the West, you've already lost. It's hopeless. You can't win. Give up. Try to get your own while you can. Don't worry about the future. That is such a pernicious and evil and self-fulfilling idea.
Well, one of the funny things actually about the sort of Lord of the Rings discourse as a result of the Rings of Power in particular has been this attempt to humanize the orcs.
Right.
Right. And we've seen it before actually in the kind of Starship Troopers discourse, where you get leftists saying, oh my God, you really think that the humans are the good guys? The bugs are the good guys.
They unironically side with the bugs.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, no. Like it's a normal thing to be in favor of your own species. I mean, you know, trying to extend the kind of imperialism metaphor. But yeah, I mean, they're really pushing this idea that actually you should watch the Rings of Power and you should actually think, well, the orcs, you know, they're aggressive, but you know, like, they're just trying to protect their own people. They want to have a land of their own, to have children and raise their families. And it's just, it's so confused. It's so insane and confused. I mean, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny, and it certainly doesn't stand up to any kind of I don't even know. I think you just almost present it on its own terms. You just say, like, look, I mean, these people genuinely think that, you know, you should be rooting for the orcs, for the bugs in Starship Troopers. I mean, they're
not joking.
No, their moral sense, their moral intuitions are so corrupted, and they're so obsessed with victimization and imperialism and the kind of crime of self-assertiveness and self-interest and, you know, kind of protecting your own, that they'll just come out with this crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually another part of the George R. R. Martin thing in the same interview, I think, where he asks, you know, what is Aragorn's tax policy? He says, you know, well, what about all the orcs? There are still orcs out there at the end of the movie. Is he just going to go around and slaughter them? And it's like, yeah. Yeah, he's going to go around and slaughter all of them. Yes. Even the little orc babies, like, yeah, those two. No, all of the orcs are dying. And then, of course, you have the scene from Lord of the Rings where they're drawn fully formed out of a sack of ooze, so it's not like there are even our orc babies to worry about. But that, it's funny, because that was another thing George R. R. Martin asked, was what about all the poor orcs? Oh dear.
Yeah, I mean,
we're gonna throw them in a volcano.
But you know, what's quite funny actually about George R. R. Martin is that he can't finish the Game of Thrones series, you know, because he's actually written himself, and he's admitted this, he's written himself into a corner where he's killed off anybody who was noble, anybody who was worthy, anybody who could actually carry the narrative forward in a way that would be not just satisfying, but also even just like logical. It's like, is it just a kind of directionless story where it's just people endlessly slaughtering each other, which isn't really a story at all?
Right.
It's just carnage. Or is it actually a story where you do have a hero and someone you can root for? And, you know, I mean, they kind of had to, what, they resurrected Jon Snow, didn't they?
I think they'd have to, in the series. In the movies they did, yeah.
Yeah, and they made it very, very kind of Hollywood, I think, in the way that it finished. Because they kind of, they had to restore something satisfying to the narrative. Because it's like, I mean, you can watch The Red Wedding and, oh, this is shocking, you know, we never expected that this guy that we all liked would be murdered like this and his whole family and whatever. But you can't actually build a satisfying narrative around that. Like 10 seasons of that would just be... It's actually boring. It makes you very jaded. I think a lot of Redditors who kind of really like that sort of stuff are pretty jaded anyway. And I think George R. R. Martin is probably quite jaded too.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, earlier in the show, we were talking about people like Jordan Peterson and, inspiring masculinity. And this all ties in with that, right? You need heroes. You need, his famous quote is, you don't tell stories to make the kids scared of dragons. You tell the stories to tell them they can defeat the dragons, right? So, we're missing that. We're missing that inspiration of like, yeah, it's hard. And yeah, the evil seems really strong, but actually good wins in the end if you persist. Because that's actually the truth. That's actually real.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's what people clamor for. And I think you do only need to look at, the way that people are abandoning these new kind of revisionist versions of The Lord of the Rings and all that kind of stuff to see that. Like people do really want a traditional narrative that's structured in a way that is comprehensible, that can actually provide some kind of orientation in real life.
Yeah. I get, with Lord of the Rings and George R. R. Martin, I mean, he is taking a form that is built on the back of, like, the spine of the fantasy novel is the hero. So it's like, how do you make this and then, withdraw the most important aspect of it, which is the central heroic character that wins against all odds. Like, without that, no one would watch Star Wars if Luke got blown up in the final trench run and, the Empire continued. It's like nobody would watch that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if George R. R. Martin had written the original trilogy, then he would have died in the assault on the Death Star, wouldn't he, in A New Hope.
And that would have been it, yeah.
And that would have been it. And then you would have just had some, kind of rumination on Emperor Palpatine's tax policy.
That's the best way to put it. That's exactly right. I think I'll tell the crew, because I pulled in the video yesterday, and it's pretty long, but the very end of Sargon's video I thought was especially powerful. Because, again, it is about inspiring people with reality and knowing that actually good wins because it's good. Evil doesn't win because it's evil. You just need good people to fight. And we're going to open up the phone lines for your calls next hour as well. So if we can open up the phone lines now, I'll go ahead and give out the number. It's 1-877-789-2539. We do need to get some videos from the World Economic Forum and other stuff going on. And we've just been having a great time talking about masculinity as a concept. When we get back, we'll talk about, how this impacts with geopolitics. In the meantime, I do want you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Remember, you're getting a free shirt with any purchase of any size at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. It is a $40 value, a $40 shirt, but you get it absolutely free, and it's the only way you can get it. So if you're trying to collect all the InfoWars shirts, you need to go now to thealexjonesstore.com. Any purchase gets you that free shirt. And this only goes on for a few more days. So go now, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, and we'll be back on the other side with Hour 3, your calls, and more.
I reckon a lot of I've been on the air for a long time, and we've done quite a few things here. And I've had a lot of different ways that I tried to continue on our mission. So I want to tell you about a begging right here. This is a limited edition knife. We just came out with it a couple days ago. And, well, some people call it a sling blade. I call it a Kaiser blade. But you need something to take care of yourself or your family and protect you. I think this will do it. It's an important remake. Updated World War II trench knife. Double-edged stainless steel, razor sharp. Life is fiery with its beauty. It's got a nice little pin-up girl there right there on it. So I reckon this is just about as good as you're going to get is some fried taters and biscuits and mustard. So if you want to get one of these before they sell out with the murdered out brass knuckles and skull crusher. Then I reckon you better get on over to thealexjonesstore.com while the getting's good. And I appreciate you keeping us on the air in our mission. I call it a Kaiser Blade. And it's a limited edition right now. But all I know is the globalists shouldn't have done what they did to that boy, what Epstein did. So all I can say is they're going to have the Lord to deal with. But, limited edition, almost sold out. I just know you want this knife. It's selling out quick. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.